Blog Talk Radio.
Joining us here on Westside Visions on blogtalkradio.com. Well, today, people, President Joseph Biden did get declared by the Associated Press as the presumptive nominee at 7:16 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time after he won the Georgia primary with at least 100 of its 108 delegates, which gave him enough to put him above the 1,968 delegates needed to lock up the nomination. When the polls close in Mississippi at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, he will more than likely pick up another 35, as he is the only candidate on the ballot there. Earlier in the day, he won 6 delegates from the Northern Mariana Islands, and the AP concluded Biden would win enough delegates in Georgia to clinch the nomination after an analyst found out that neither Dean Phillips of Minnesota or self-help author Marianne Williamson could win enough delegates to prevent him from clinching. And anyone that has been following this process already knows that even though there have been challenges, and of course we still have Mr. Kennedy out there doing whatever it is he's doing, and of course the no labels people getting ready to pull the stunt that they're getting ready to pull, that Joe Biden will be the presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party. And with his 91 indictments, I'm quite sure that 45 will be the presumptive nominee for the GOP, the Republican Party, the grand old party, who is in such disarray right now, it makes absolutely no sense. As you know, his daughter-in-law and one of his lackeys have taken over the RNC, and just the other day, they fired a ton of people working there. And I can guarantee you that they are getting ready to make sure that whatever money is in the coffers for the RNC begins to flow towards Donald Trump. But that's an RNC problem, and that's not why I'm here tonight, because tonight I am going to discuss being black in America in 2024. And those of us who are black pretty much know what that is like. It is definitely a journey every day. We definitely have our ups and downs. And, you know, we have to deal with things a lot different than other folks here in the country. So that being said, I'm going to give you the call-in number, and I would like to hear from some of you. Some of you were invited, and some of you were asked, but hey, that call-in number is 563-999-3043. Now, we all know that since 1619, when our forefathers come here in chains, that our lives here was going to be very much different than anyone else's. We didn't get to come here seeking political freedom. We didn't get to come here seeking religious freedom. Our ancestors were brought here in chains to do the menial labor that white folks did not want to do. And from the start, we were behind the proverbial eight ball. Even though we had many, many of our forefathers stand up for this country, it took a long while, and it is still taking a long while for us to get treated decent, be given the same recognition that white folks get, to get an education without a whole lot of drama. And I know there are some of you out there who will say, well, you know, brothers and sisters are getting degrees and they are finding these top-rate jobs. And yes, they are. But I can guarantee you it is not easy nor simple. Anybody that looks back in time to the battles for equal education, to black schools being bombed, to sisters like Ruby Bridges, having to go to school with federal troops, to the young black children in Boston in the mid-70s who were attacked on their school buses. Equality for blacks here in America has always been a fight. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 was the first time that the United States government addressed the racial caste system that had been protected for centuries by the law. You know, in many ways, it kind of answered the call for jobs and freedom, and that was because of the March on Washington. And because of the March on Washington, things eased up a little bit, you know. They said they banned discrimination in the workplace and the housing system, and the government began funding programs and attacking Jim Crow in the South. But as you know, even though you asked for it and asked people to stop doing it, this is America. And white folks have always done what they wanted to do. George Wallace was a big proponent of keeping us in our place and keeping us out of black universities, which makes me think about guys of today, like DeSantis, governor of Florida, who decided to attack diversity, equality, and inclusion, to the point that the University of Florida decided that it would fire every single person on its diversity, equality, and inclusion staff, and they did. But while they were culling the university of these programs, they ran into some trouble and end up getting sued behind some of the very programs that they wanted to get rid of. And they have had to make some deals about including certain stuff and working on certain things. You know, Jordan Peele, young black actor, director, first time I became aware of him, he was doing a comic act with his friend Key. He said that he looked at racism as one of the social demons, and at its worst, it's the systematic commitment to oppression. That's coming from a young black man who is big time in Hollywood now, and it wasn't like he didn't work hard to get there, but he has not put blinders on. And he sees it for what it is. Now, tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I'm just going to do what I do. And I will go through this information, put it out there, speak on it a little bit. Then that'll be the end of the show. So our population here in the United States is growing, whether people want to admit it or not. There are an estimated 47.9 million people who self-identify as Black, making up 14.4% of the nation's population, and this marks a 32% increase since the year 2000, when there were 36.2 million Black people living here in the U.S. Now, I don't need to tell you this because I know most of you know this yourself. Black Americans, we're diverse. Our group consists of people with varied racial and ethnic identities and experiences. The nation's Black population includes those who say their race is Black, either alone or in a combination of other racial backgrounds. It also includes Hispanics or Latinos who say their race is Black. And when you take a look at it overall, you know, we have been listed at like four different groups. So we have single race, non-Hispanic Black people, multiracial, non-Hispanic Black people, Black Hispanic people. Now, our Black population is young, whether people want to believe that or not. The median age of Black people here in the United States is roughly 32.1 years, nearly 6 years younger than the U.S. population's median age of 38 years. Roughly 30% of the entire Black population is below the age of 20, while 12% were 65 or older. And, you know, there's a lot of reasoning to this. Since the dawn of time, Black men have been the victims. And they start bumping us off at young ages. They start getting rid of us as quickly as possible because they figured they can keep a Black woman, breed with her, try to dilute our race, but they couldn't because they still needed folks to work them fields and pick them crops. So therefore, they had to keep X amount of brothers around so that you had that strong field Negro, that strong field coon, that one that was going to work hard, do everything Massa say. Now, the general fertility rate among Black females, they say, ages 15 to 44, was 6.1%, and that was in 2022, meaning that 6.1% of females in that age group had birth in the previous 12 months. The vast majority, 96% of the Black population as of 2022, they claim only spoke English, 89%, or they speak another language at home, and they also speak English very well. That's about 8%. Besides English, other languages spoken at home by the U.S. Black population ages 5 and older include Spanish, French or Haitian Creole, Arabic, and other Ethiopian languages. Regionally, when it comes to our people, we all know this ourselves. The highest concentration of Black America lives where? In the South. More than half, which is about 56%, live there. And we all know, we all have relatives in the South. I myself have relatives in Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina. And you know, it's truly a different world. Because living here on the West Coast is a little bit different than living down south. Down south, you know, have had decades of, you know, even though racism is nationwide, but they have had decades of folks running things the way they wanted to and making sure that you and your family approach things a certain way, especially if they lived in a small southern town where you had one of them kind of mayors where this guy had been the mayor, his dad had been the mayor, his grandfather had been the mayor, his friend's dad had been the chief of police, and they ran things a certain way, and black folks, you know, had to walk a very fine line in order not to forever be caught up in some silliness. You know, Billie Holiday sung that song, Strange Fruit, because lynching was like a national sport down south. And even though it happened up north, Chicago, New York, Detroit, yeah, madness really took place in the south. So, as I said, 56% live in the 17% live in the Midwest and the Northeast, and 10% of us live out here in the West. When it comes to states of residence, Texas is the home to the largest black population at 4.2 million, and Florida comes in a close second with 3.9 million. And I think that has to do with the fact that after slavery and the Emancipation Proclamation, a lot of blacks got up out and headed that way. They realized that if they went there, maybe, just maybe, they could start some towns and open up some settlements and be free without a lot of drama. And for a while, I guess that was the way, because even though you look at it and a lot of times you'll see things that talk about cowboys and whatnot, when it comes to cattle drives and taming the West, black America, former slaves, did that. And it's always funny when I watch a Western and they're talking about the old Chisholm Trail and all these guys. I know that the majority of those guys, the black, Indian, Hispanic, because remember, at this time, places like Texas, Florida, New Mexico, Arizona, all of that was Mexico. It was not the United States of America. It's still part of Mexico. And that fight at the Alamo that was for independence, you know, if you really do your history and really do some studying, you'll find out that all of that jumped off because some white settlers decided to roll into that area and claim it as their own. And the Mexican government said, no, we're willing to work with you and allow you to do some things, but this belongs to our country. And, of course, they didn't see it that way, didn't want it that way, which led to the Battle of the Alamo, in which guys like John Bowie, Davy Crockett, Austin, and a few others went down in what they say is a blaze of glory, leading to a bigger battle to where Texas became a possession of the United States and it became part of the United States. So Georgia comes in third with 3.7 million. And among metropolitan areas, New York City Metro, which includes parts of New Jersey and Pennsylvania, has the greatest number of black residents, 3.6 million. And in a distant second is the Atlanta Metro area with 2.2 million, followed up by Chicago at 1.7, and about 4 in 10 black people in the U.S., 39%, live in households that are headed by married couples as of 2022. 3 in 10 black people, 31%, live in a household where the head is all female, and 5% in male-headed households, and fewer than 2 in 10%, 16%, are part of non-family households. And I find it fun that that number for female household is what it is, because let them tell it, that is the majority of households here in America, that there are no black married men at home with their kids, that most of these children are raised by a single parent, and it's usually the female. 3 in 10, 31%. You know, I personally would like to see that number be a little lower, but it is what it is. And, you know, the thing about that is you never know, unless you live under that roof, unless you're part of that dynamic, you never know what led to that. Sometimes it may be incarceration, because of the good friend of mine likes to say, we have a prison, we have a pipeline to the prison from schools. And if you guys think about it and look at it, that was put together very well. Because if you look back at these so-called special education classes, or the classes for troublemakers, all these schools for so-called troublemakers, usually it's young people, young black men, even though everybody has them, black, white, pink, or purple. But usually young black men get targeted. You know, maybe that brother has a reading problem and he doesn't read the way people think he should, read a certain way, the way the teacher think he should. And instead of helping him, they complain. He's a problem. Put him in special ed. And, of course, that makes an extra chip get on his shoulder. Or there may be something going on at home, and that kid has an anger issue. Put him in special ed. You know what's funny is you hear a lot of stories about kids who have went to special ed, who have come out around junior high, high school, got into regular classes, and end up becoming some of the greatest people in the world. So don't always buy into that story that there's a problem with that child. Because many of you know, a lot of times with our schools, they just want to pass a child on. They don't take the time they should with them, and we already know that the learning materials usually are 2, 3, 4, 5 years behind what the kids across town are getting. And anybody that think I'm lying, know that to be true. Now, one of the other things that I read was that about a quarter of all black U.S. adults, 26%, ages 25 and older, have a bachelor's degree or more education. Another third, 32%, have completed some college without obtaining a bachelor's degree, and roughly 4 in 10, 42%, have at most graduated from high school or earned an equivalent such as a GED. Two-thirds, 66% of all black adults identify as Protestants when it comes to the church thing. And as you guys know, church plays a big role in Black America. You may not be a person that runs the church every Sunday. You may not be a person that's always swinging through the church doors, but the majority of Black folks I know do go to church. Of course, you know, we have that traditional group who show up only on Easter, and that's been since the dawn of time. But churches, Black preachers, have always played a major key in Black America, because your Black pastors are usually those men and women who are held to high esteem. They are usually someone that you can go and talk to about your problems and your issues. I can remember back in the day when Black pastors were really tight and stuck together, and there was a problem in the community, and they didn't mind that it was two or three different Black pastors, but they would get together and figure them problems out together. You know, so-and-so and them are having a problem getting their electrical bill paid. Well, let's see what we can do to help them. You know, so-and-so been out of work for a minute. You know what? Let's see if we can find that man or that woman a job, because they got miles to feed. Now, I can be honest. We do have some pastors here that are real good at stepping forward and helping folks out. I happen to know one of them, Reverend Dr. Floyd Harris. Good brother, young brother, insightful brother, social justice minister who will stand with anyone having an issue. And I can say that honestly, because not only have I watched him do it, I've also been proud enough to stand with him. For that, I have no problem giving that man a shout out, because he is one of the good ones. Over at 806 Collins at Fame, AME, where this weekend the spring session of Freedom School will start. And if I'm not mistaken, I do believe the start time will be between 7:30 and 8 a.m. with Sister Eileen Reed out there, who is the president of Freedom School, holding down the fort as usual. But as usual, we will have volunteers out there. Why? I'm one of the volunteers, and I will definitely be there. By hook or crook, I will be there. Pastor will be there, because he will be doing his the gardening demonstration he does with the children and teaching them how to garden, how to grow your own, how to be self-sufficient. So that'll be this weekend over at Fame 806 Collins. Trust me, if you're on Facebook, get that information. Bring your children out. This is important, and this is a beautiful thing for them to learn and be involved in. Bring them out. Bring them out. Bring them out. Getting back to what I was talking about, as I was saying, 66% of all Black Americans identify as Protestant. They say roughly 1 in 5, 21%, are religiously unaffiliated. I guess that's non-denominational. I don't know. I know growing up, I've always gone to a Baptist church. Well, to be honest, I've gone to a Baptist church. I've been to a Catholic church. I've been with agnostics. excuse me. Church of God in Christ. When I would go visit my relatives in Louisiana, I had to make the rounds. Protestant, Baptist, African Methodist, Catholic, and, of course, our people in the voodoo. You made the rounds. You know, you didn't want to insult anybody, And I'm one of those cats when it comes to religion. Hey, everybody is allowed to do their own thing. Because personally, I believe your relationship with the Lord, that's between you and him. And like I said, you don't have to run through the doors every Sunday. I go online sometimes. As long as you and the Lord got that connection, you can talk to him spiritually. He can talk to you spiritually. And trust me, he will tap you on your shoulder when he needs to. That's just truth. You know, one of the things about being black in America is that black Americans have always had a clear vision for how to achieve change when it comes to racial inequality. A lot of what we talk about is support for significant reforms to complete overhauls of several U.S. institutions to ensure fair treatment. And I do mean fair treatment, whether it's housing, dealing with the police, medical, education. Those of you out there know this to be true. There is no excuse for a black woman to go to the doctor and not get the same treatment, the same care, the same attention that a white woman would get. And I know people say, well, you know, maybe it's not what they think it is. Oh, yeah, it is. Because a black woman, a Hispanic woman, a Native American woman, whenever they go to the doctor and are having a major problem, they're not getting the respect they deserve when they talk about their symptoms. They got somebody standing there second-guessing them, which is why I think it is important for us to find doctors of our own. We must hook up with doctors who understand our experiences and our culture. I think back to when I was a youngster here in Fresno. Our family doctor was Dr. Ulysses Curry. And I can tell you honestly, that soft-speaking brother was the man. Him, Dr. Bug, Dr. Brown, oh, there were some brothers out there that stood for the community. And I can remember at that time, California Avenue ran all the way through the Elm, and there was Dr. Curry's office over on your right-hand side, right around the corner from Rudy's Drugstore. When it was over on the right-hand side, when it was on the right-hand side of Elm next to a hardware store. And the one thing I loved about Dr. Curry was he was for real. He was honest. His nurses was honest. He had a nurse named Terry that could give you a shot and you wouldn't even know it. You'd be sitting there waiting on pain. She'd be like, hey, I'm done. What? She had skills. But they listened to their patients. It wasn't what you get nowadays. You go in to see your doctor. You know, they send a little nurse in, ask you two or three questions, and poof, they out. Doctor comes in. They don't even do an exam on you no more. They listen to what somebody then sent them or sent them on their phone, and that's that. Or now, for a lot of folks, their doctor shows up in video visits. That's what has become, because after the pandemic, a lot of that started happening. But we have got to start seeking out what we need. Police reform is needed, because whether people want to admit it or not, black men and black women are still being shot down and killed at an alarming rate. This is 2024. And one of the things after the George Floyd incident people had hope for was improvement with dealing with the police. And for a hot second, it seemed to go that route. But now they are right back to doing what they were doing before. And in some states, they are still getting away with doing the most. It's like down there in Mississippi. When that story broke of all these folks being buried behind the jail, their relatives never being contacted. Some of that went on for decades. And I noticed how that story came and went. And most of those folks were black. The mother who was looking for her son who had come up missing. That boy had been killed and buried behind that police department. Make it make sense. Texas, young brother down there, having to deal with these folks, and the Crown Act is a law in Texas, but yet they want to punish him for his hair, for his locks, talking about, well, you know, he may not be breaking the Crown Act rule, but he doesn't have a right to express himself. He should be more of an American and fall into American values. What American values? See, that is his value, his pride in himself, the way he carries himself. But yet, they want to play that game. They do it to us all the time. Paula, you're on the line. Please introduce yourself.
Hello, it's Dr. Harris. Dr. Harris, how's everyone doing?
We're doing good, Pastor. We are doing good.
Good, good, good. I've been tied up all day, and I promised you I was going to call in and support the show and all your followers around the world and around the country. We appreciate all the good work you're doing down here in Mississippi, Fresno.
Well, you know, Pastor, you know, I appreciate that. And what I'm talking about tonight, being black in America in 2024, I'm glad you called in, because not only are you a pastor, but you're a community leader. And you're a strong community leader. And I don't know if you've been listening to the show, but I made sure to make that point to let folks know what kind of a man you are and why we respect you so much. But as a community leader, you know, let me hear some of your aspects on what we go through. Because as a leader, I know you see it a little bit different.
Yeah, it's very interesting here in the 2024. I think that those that came before us, you know, did what they felt that they needed to do at that time. I think what I see now really is some self-destruction going on right now. What I mean by that is that, you know, we have all this technology now, you know, iPhones, Facebook, iPads, and all this stuff. You know, our ancestors didn't have all that back in 1921 when they built Black Wall Street. And I always, you know, I get in conversations with people about that, and I say, you know, we can build as a people. You know, I mean, we created everything in this old country that people enjoy today, that folks don't want to admit patterns that our ancestors created that they got no credit for. But I said, what is the difference between in 1921 and 2024? Is that our ancestors had themselves working together as a unit. In other words, do for self or be a slave.
Exactly.
Then we have all this technology and all this stuff, and we're just like crawdads, you know? And, you know, I was talking to Brother Ernest the other day. I said, Brother Ernest, I was out of town, and I said, you're a mechanic, Brother Ernest. I said, let me ask you something. I said, how many black car shops do we have in Fresno? And he said, we don't have one. I said, but I see all black people driving cars. You go around the big church, small church, you know, neighborhood, you see people with cars. They're not driving on their
homes.
I said, so why is it that we can't come together in this community, Fresno, and say, look, you got 10 pastors to come together and say, look, we're going to tell our congregation, we're going to open up a car shop. we're going to hire the people in our congregation to be self-employed, and we're going to do business like everybody else, like the Hispanics, the Asians, and everybody else. But
right.
We can't even come together as a people to be able to create a tire shop. You know, the basic necessity, right, in a community. You know, and so it's really a, this fraudish mentality, mindset we have that's really holding us back right now. And I really don't know what the answer is, because I'm a progressive preacher. I'm a progressive civil rights leader. I speak truth to power. I don't compromise my principles. I say what I mean, and I mean what I say. But we have to come together around a common cause, around something small, and build from there. And I just kept saying, we could have a one-stop shop, a tire shop. We can end from a tire shop. We could have a place to do nails and hair, another place that does soul food kitchen, you know, all in one little plaza. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And so I think that we really have to think out the box right now on the direction that we're going, because once 45 get in office, man, listen, it's going to be hell on wheels here in America. They
exactly.
They thought he was bad then. They ain't
seen exactly.
That.
This man has already told you, should he get in, he's going to be a dictator from day one. He is. If you don't look like me, you're leaving here. And Black America need to wake up. They really do. All this silliness about what somebody ain't doing for you. See, I'm like you. We got to do for self. And the things that you just mentioned make a whole lot of sense. Now, I was saying earlier that we have the spring session of Freedom School starting this Saturday, and how you also will be doing that demonstration you do with these young folks to teach them about going back to the earth, how to grow, how to do for self, how to be self-sufficient. Explain that.
Yeah. Like I said, Doc, we're at the crossroads right now, and I think that we're really going to have to figure this thing out right now, because we're in some deep trouble right now, Doc.
Well, you're absolutely correct. And as I was saying earlier to the people, you will be doing the gardening demonstration for Freedom School this Saturday when we start the spring session. And one of the things I've always appreciated about that is that you have always took those young folks, boys and girls, and showed them how to be self-sufficient. Explain some of that.
Yeah, we're gonna be doing the spring session here. We're gonna be having the ag piece going. We're also gonna be having the sewing classes going. We're also gonna be having the nutrition classes going, and we're also gonna be having some music classes going as well. And so. So we're going to be doing registration, I believe, this week. Then on the 23rd, we're going to be having an actual demonstration. So, you know, I put in a fitness center. Thank you.
Right.
I put in a fitness center over at our place so that we can start working on our health, you know. trying to, you know, lose some of this. Well, let me speak about myself, me losing some of this weight.
I know what you mean. Trust me. I hear you.
But I got to give all hats off to our president, Arlene Reed. She spoke last week at my church. And I always use this. She spoke at my church last week. And I tell you, man, she just rocked the house, man.
And, oh, yeah, I listened in on that this Sunday.
Yeah, she did a beautiful job. And like I said, we just here to build for the next several generations, you know. And but, you know, like I said, we got to get more. You know, Malcolm X said it best. You know, he said we have to control the politics of our community. We have to control the jobs in our community. You know, all that stuff Malcolm said is a reality today, you know. And that's why we have to go back and read. We have to go back and read about what the ancestors have said and done. The Black Panther, you know, they left information here for us to learn from. So we just got to keep moving, man. It's just, because if not, we're going to be the forgotten people. And we have lost enough already to continue to keep going down this road. So I just tell your listening audience to be progressive, you know, do your own research, read, come up with a plan, you know, for our community, our people, so that, you know, we can continue to build the Black Wall Streets and then protect what we build. Because we have to understand once we build something, they're going to try to come and destroy it. And so we have, like you always say, Brother Tony, you know, go to the shooting range, learn how to shoot. You have the right to bear arms. So, like I said, keep teaching, brother, like you're teaching. We following you. You got our full support. We appreciate you coming on our TV show at our place. We have a TV studio and a radio studio over at our place. So we're going to get you back on there again.
Well, Pastor, you know, when it comes to 806 Collins, that's my home church, man. That's my family. And that I've always appreciated about you is this. You do speak truth to power, and we work hard at it. And you include everybody. No one is left out, from the oldest to the youngest. No one is left out. Because we truly, at 806 Collins, we truly believe in taking care of the village. That's what we do. I get ready to wrap up. Anything else you want to say?
You ain't never lied. You know, we don't turn anybody away, you know. And, you know, we just want people to feel respected. You know, we want people to feel welcome, you know. We're having our membership is growing every week. People coming and joining us and want to be part of something of history. So it's just a beautiful thing. And like I tell my people, you know, it ain't about me. You know, it's about us. It's about our families, you know, our children, you know. So that's just how I look at it at this point. But those come out this Saturday. We'll be clearing out the weeds for summer. And we'll be getting ready for the 23rd.
Yes, sir. And like I always say, each one, reach one, teach one. Those of you proficient with your arms, take your folks to the range. Get them trained up. Get them registered. Start a neighborhood watch. Start a cop watch. Watch the people who are watching us. As we move forward towards November 2024, get your folks ready to vote. Because this may be the last time you vote in a free election. Do the right thing. Get your people out there to vote. Take care of your family. Take care of the village. Pastor, I appreciate you stopping in tonight. And as I always say to you, stay strong, my brother. Stay strong.
All right. We appreciate you. Love you now.
All right, bro.
All right, bro.
Good night. Well, folks, we're going to call it the end. Those of you who sat in with me tonight, I appreciate you. Those of you that'll be sitting in with me Friday, I appreciate you. I'll holler.